I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Today, a conversation about how the rules of writing for the internet have informed how we write in more traditional forums. What has and what should popular usage tell us about what old rules of grammar we should cling to and which ones we should gleefully abandon? Emmy Favilla joins me. She's the former copy chief at BuzzFeed. Her recent book, A World Without Whom, The Essential Guide to Language in the BuzzFeed Age, is a bold manifesto on language and grammar in the age of tweets and texts. The distinction between an M-dash and an N-dash, how many spaces before and after an ellipsis, and the proper way to laugh on the internet. We'll talk about how to write right, right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It is, in fact, midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. And word nerds, today you are in luck. My guest is Emmy Jo Favilla. She is a senior commerce editor at BuzzFeed in New York. And for several years before that, she was BuzzFeed's global copy chief. And as such, she created the BuzzFeed Style Guide, and that has led to a terrific book. It's called A World Without Whom, The Essential Guide to Language in the BuzzFeed Age. It is hilarious. It is instructive. It pays homage to the serial comma, for example, which Emmy Favilla calls the cilantro of punctuation marks. It offers a love sonnet to the M-dash, and perhaps most of all, this book is a high five to popular usage. And for those of us of a certain age, it is an ever so gently and kindly issued rebuke to every English teacher we've ever had. To wit, long ago and far away, we were told that one would never say the basket contained over 10 oranges. Correct usage in ancient times, the basket contains more than 10 oranges. Emily Favilla's take: get over it. Either is fine when it comes to matters quantitative. You can pose your questions about grammar and usage and punctuation and capitalization and emojis and language in general to Emmy Favilla. You can give us a call at 410-662-8780. You can send us an email at midday@wypr.org. You can drop us a tweet at @midday_WYPR. Emmy Favilla joins us today from Argo Studios in New York. Emmy, it's nice to make your acquaintance. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Tom. Nice to be here.
And I got to tell you, I've just been dying to talk to you. I've had your book on my bedside table for a while, and I just think this is a terrific book. I really do. I mean, sometimes I get super excited about the authors I get to talk to, and this is one of those instances. You published the style guide for BuzzFeed in 2014, and a lot of folks called it a style guide for the internet. And you do make the point quite beautifully in this book, throughout the book, that there really, there in a way, has to be a different set of rules now that we have the internet containing all of this written content, different set of rules from the rules that we had when it was just newspapers and books, etc.
For sure, yeah. You know, on the internet, we're dealing with, you know, we're dealing with tweets and social media and captions, and things aren't always following, you know, the traditional journalistic format. That's not to say that if we are, you know, if we're talking about a piece of hard news, an investigative journalism piece, you know, anything that would be analogous to something that might appear in a newspaper or magazine, of course, the standard grammar, usage, punctuation rules apply. But when we're talking about something like, oh, here's a funny story about how Justin Bieber was eating a burrito the wrong way, you know, I think some of those rules can kind of go out the window if we want to use language and we want to use capitalization or punctuation to be breezy or funny in ways, you know, that you know, we don't necessarily need to use the same rules that apply to hard news pieces. And working at BuzzFeed as the global copy chief, you know, in charge of basically copy editing everything across the site, from these lighthearted, buzzy celebrity posts or funny lists about, you know, the funniest dogs on the internet, as well as breaking news stories and essays and features, I kind of had to figure out when to bend the rules, when to create new rules, and kind of have everyone aligned based on the type of content that they were creating. And then, you know, videos come into play, and, you know, social media posts and that sort of thing. So it was a lot of stuff to think about, and it was very different from my role as a copy editor prior to BuzzFeed when I had worked in print. Prior to BuzzFeed, I worked in print magazines, and everything was a little bit more by the books, and I kind of had to change the way I thought about language and about the rules when I, you know, when I got to a place that was solely on the internet. And it was wonderful, and it was a little scary at first, but I think, you know, it's something to truly be celebrated, the way that our language is shifting and the way that we can use emojis to add tone and nuance. Same thing for punctuation and capitalization, and, you know, play with words and play with language in a way that we never quite could before, in print or, you know, in handwritten, you know, handwritten correspondence and that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Our director and engineer, Luke Spicknall, reminds me, and I don't mean to put you under too much pressure, but he does remind me with some regularity that at any one time, there may be dozens of people listening to this broadcast. So with that in mind, for the dozens, let's start at the very beginning. Explain to folks what a copy editor is, as opposed to what an editor is in relation to a reporter, because they are two different things, just to make sure folks understand what the distinction is.
Of course. So a copy editor is the editor who's responsible for the more technical aspects of a piece of writing. We're dealing not only with spelling and grammar and punctuation, but also making sure that syntax is correct, usage is correct, that sentences make sense, that things flow correctly, as opposed to an editor who would be looking more so for general content and would be saying, hey, you know, maybe we should talk to this person and add a little more information about this thing, or and do more of like a developmental substantive edit. And the copy editor is, you know, a lot of times, and I, as a copy editor, you know, I don't mean this to sound disparaging, but a lot of times a copy editor is thought sort of as a support staff member. When, you know, of course, I'm sure it comes as no surprise that I believe that copy editors are very integral to a well-functioning, well-oiled newsroom or publication of any sort. So yeah, the copy editor is looking for the more technical aspects, making sure that language being used is fair, is inclusive. That's been a huge part of my role, in particular at BuzzFeed, being a resource for people to say, hey, you know, is this how we describe, you know, people who are native to Hawaii? You know, that sort of thing. How do we talk about people with disabilities or diseases? So it's not just the spelling and correct grammar and punctuation, though that is typically what you would think a copy editor, that's typically what you think of when you think of a copy editor, the person who just makes sure that a piece is cohesive and accurate.
And we should just mention, you have been a copy editor for a number of publications before you went to BuzzFeed. And since this book came out, you've actually switched from the copy desk and now you're doing something else. Explain what you're doing now.
Oh, sure. Yeah, so I wrote a book on copying and I decided to get the heck out of there because I paid all my dues. no, you know, I still am sort of the de facto copy editor in my new role, which is a senior commerce editor. As of last year, I moved over to our, the bigger department is, the umbrella department is the commerce department. And I work in, I work on the market team, which we write lists and product reviews. We're basically the shopping and products team, and we deal with affiliate marketing as a way to create revenue for the company. So I'm editing more, you know, more in the capacity of a typical, you know, typical editor as opposed to a copy editor. But I'm also copy editing because it's never a skill that you lose. And, you know, of course, when you see that a serial comma is missing or that something isn't punctuated correctly, you're going to go ahead and fix it. But I'm strategizing, writing, editing. Basically, we deal with, you know, products and services and reviews of things for our readers. And I sort of just wanted to diversify my skills. I'd been the copy editor. I'd been the copy chief at BuzzFeed for 5 years. And like, as you mentioned prior to that, I'd been a copy editor basically since I graduated college. So I've always written as well.
Time to mix it up.
To mix it up a little bit.
And the book is mixing it up too. your book title a world without whom, you actually advocate for that. And you even imply, or not imply, you state that you assume almost everybody else would like to get rid of it as well. You say, face it, you hate whom. If you don't, you're likely a liar or someone with an English degree who actually still really hates whom, but can't bear to come to terms with your traitorous hatred for fear of your overpriced degree being snatched from your cold, dead hands, never to be seen again.
So I stick by
you
it.
You stick by it. That's your story, and you're sticking to it. And you are basically saying we should avoid whom under any circumstances.
I'm not saying we should avoid whom under any circumstances. You know, I think in correspondence, to whom it may concern is never going to, you know, be tossed to the wayside, for whom the bell tolls. You know, those sorts of things aren't
the
going
Hemingway
to change.
The Hemingway estate is delighted to hear that. Right.
But in casual conversation, in newspapers, there was actually, it's funny, my old manager from my final internship before I graduated, Anna Warman, she's basically my mentor and the person who encouraged me to become a copy editor. She sent me a text the other day, and it was a New York Times article, and the second line was, "Whom are we kidding?" And it's sort of like no one actually talks like that in conversation. You know, it kind of comes across as sort of stodgy, snobby. Sure, if you want to use it correctly and if you're a place like the New York Times or the New Yorker or somewhere that wants to uphold, you know, this air of not holier than thou, but, you know, a sort of sophisticated air, and you have
an object is an object, and one shall say it as an object, right?
Exactly. Yeah, but, you know, I just think that in an essay or you need to judge what context you're communicating in. And for the most part, in conversations with our friends and family, we're probably not using whom. And the worst thing is when you use whom incorrectly, because then you're not only sound snobby, but you're actually wrong.
Yeah.
So I think that everyone should just do themselves a favor and forget it exists,
right,
except in, you know, to whom it may concern.
Keep it
but
there.
Yeah, I think
we'll
be a better and less stressed out world.
Yeah, well, you say when in doubt, use who, so you're not wrong and pretentious. And I think
exactly.
That's very good advice. Very, very good advice. You have an absolute love affair with the M dash.
Yeah, I do.
M as in Mary, or it's not. It's E M as in Mary. You call it the pinnacle of elegance. So, at what point did you fall in love with the M dash in your life? And have you talked about this with your therapist?
I actually have a tattoo behind my ear of the copy editor symbol for the M dash. I really love it that much.
All right,
it was
you're
after
in.
One
you're all in.
Mary's.
That's good.
So the M dash for the uninitiated is the long dash that pretty much serves any sort of way that you want it to. It signifies a break in thought or can introduce an aside. So sometimes it works the way that parentheses might work. Sometimes it works to just sort of interrupt the flow of a sentence if you kind of just want to interject something. I fell in love with it at first because it was just a user-friendly dash that pretty much works whenever you need it to. But on the same token, you also don't want to overuse the M dash, which I think I may have mentioned this in the book. You don't want your writing to look like Morse code with dashes all over the place. So kind of think before you toss it in all willy-nilly and figure out if maybe a colon is better or parentheses are better or a semicolon is better. But you can't go wrong with an M dash, basically. It is, you know, it's there when you need it. You just can't go wrong with it. And it's elegant and it's pretty.
On many keyboards, it's not, we should make it clear, it's not the thing that's the small dash underneath the underline thing. So, I mean, I don't even know if I know how to make an M dash on my computer. I'd have to find it somewhere. Is it a special character? I'm not even sure.
Yeah, you press, when you just have muscle memory and you press the same keys all the time and you forget what they are, it's something like control shift hyphen. And then to make the N dash, which I don't know if we have time or even want to get into that, but to make the N dash, which
N
just
is with an N like Nancy, E N
yes,
instead of E M like Mary.
Right. The N dash is about the size of a hyphen and a half, serves a very specific function, which I could write a dissertation about this. But that's control hyphen, I believe, and then an M-dash is control shift hyphen. And on iPhones, if you hold the hyphen key down, you'll see three different dashes pop up above it, and you can choose your iPhone between a hyphen, N-dash, or an M-dash.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You can use the M-dash in your text.
That's it. Ladies and gentlemen, this is news you can use. Emmy Favilla is the author of the book, A World Without Whom, The Essential Guide to Language in the BuzzFeed Age. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, you can join us at 410-662-8780. You can drop us an email, midday@wypr.org. You can drop us a tweet at midday. WYPR. You can follow me on Twitter at Tom Hall, WYPR. By the way, the City Lit Project and a group called Well-Read Black Girls, they're holding an event on Thursday evening called Finding Our Stories, Discovering Ourselves. Glory Edom will be in conversation with Baltimore's Andrea Nassina Cole, Jessica Solomon, and Alyssa Blount Moorhead Thursday night, 7 to 9 at the Motor House on North Avenue here in Baltimore. So if you're into lit, which I assume you may be, if you're listening to our conversation with Emmy Favilla, you might want to check that out. We're going to take a quick break. More with Emmy Favilla. I'm Tom Hall. It's midday. Stay with us.
You're tuned to Midday on 88.1 WYPR, Baltimore's number one news talk station.
Thanks, Matt. Welcome back. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on the program, Affirmative Action in College Admissions. Are Asian American students at a disadvantage when it comes to getting into top-tier schools? A couple of weeks ago, a judge in Boston heard arguments in a case brought by some Asian American students against Harvard University. We're going to talk about it tomorrow here on Midday. By the way, I want to let you know also about another event in town for people interested in books. Tonight, there's another installment in the ongoing Baltimore Festival of Jewish Literature. The author Deborah Wiener will talk about her book on the history of Jews in Baltimore. And the guest of honor will be the one and only Gilbert Sandler, who has shared his popular Baltimore stories here on WYPR for more than 15 years, and I am honored to have been asked to say a few words about Gil tonight before Deb Wiener gives her presentation. So I hope you can join us. It's at 6:30 at the Church of the Redeemer in North Baltimore. If you've just joined our program today, Emmy Favilla is my guest for the hour. We're talking about her delightful book, A World Without Whom, The Essential Guide to Language in the BuzzFeed Age. She is the senior commerce editor at BuzzFeed, and when she was the copy chief there, she wrote the BuzzFeed Style Guide. You're welcome to join us, as a number of folks have on the phone. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @midday WYPR. Emmy, let's go to the phones. Karen in Towson, welcome to the show. I guess you want to call Emmy out on something, huh?
Well, I know I'm a Luddite, but I'm 59, and when I hear graduated from college, I tend to yell at the radio or TV, or if they don't say from. So,
Emmy said when I graduated college. Just to be clear, for folks who might not have heard it, Emmy said graduated college, and you're saying it should be graduated from college. Is that right?
Well, that's what I'm used to, yes.
Well, Emmy, what do you think? Is that one of those things of popular usage, or is it, what do you think?
I think this is a perfect example of something that has sort of been integrated into popular usage, and in normal conversation, we really don't think twice about saying when I graduated college, when I graduated high school, as opposed to graduated from. Another example is, I don't know if you feel the same way, but something like, reasons why versus reasons. I've had tons of editors back in the day when BuzzFeed was doing a bunch of lists about, why one city is better than another, reasons why LA is better than New York. And they would say, well, isn't why redundant? And it is, sure. But it's the way we actually speak. And I just sort of think that everyone needs to accept it and celebrate that our language is evolving, because if it weren't, then it would be Latin and we'd all be talking the same way that we were, however many hundred years ago.
That's right. And Lord knows we don't want to be unevolved. And Karen, I appreciate the call. And of course, when you go, and you write about this in the book, there are regional and international differences. Mm-hmm. If you are checked into the emergency room in Britain, you are in hospital. Right. And in America, you are in the hospital. So, it's just, sometimes it's just sort of the way people do. We got a bunch of folks want to talk about, or a couple at least, that want to talk about the N-dash. Mike in Owings Mills, welcome to Midday with Emmy Favilla.
Hey, how you doing? So I want to talk about the M-dash quickly. There's quite a few ways to type it, but follow me here. So if you click hyphen, space, any letter, space, and then backspace, basically a quick click, 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 backspace, and continue, it'll automatically, in Outlook, in most programs, fill that in for you.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I hope you followed that with me.
Yeah,
there.
No, it does. It auto-formats sometimes as well, and, you know, as in Word documents, if you just type two hyphens sometimes in the newer versions of programs, it'll just auto-format and become an M-dash.
Yep. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you for taking a call that I never thought I would make.
Yeah. That's right. It's a Dear Diary day for Mike and Owings Mills. Well, thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. Carol in Havre de Grace, welcome to Midday. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
So what's on your mind, Carol?
I have a question about pronunciation. It's my pet peeve that people say for controversial, it's now controversial. For nausea, it's now nausea. And I wonder how that came about.
All right. Well, so, Emmy, is that in your wheelhouse, how people say stuff?
I wonder if that's – I mean, I do think pronunciation, of course, is another way that you know, the evolution of our language is manifesting. But I'll be honest, I've always said controversial and nausea. I don't. Is it a regional thing? Is it a generational thing? I don't. I mean,
maybe I've said it too. I pronounce it the way you do, Emmy, and that's interesting that Carol pronounces it a different way. But thanks for the call. That's great to hear. And of course, there are a lot of things. You mentioned the auto formatting. Mm-hmm. You write at great length about how to laugh on the internet as well as how to cry on the internet, and you say that you have abandoned LOL. And LOL is actually spelled all sorts of different ways, and Apple spells it capital L, lowercase OL, and it auto-corrects it even if you try to spell it some other way. So first of all, what have you replaced LOL with, and how come?
Okay, well, personally, I'm not here to tell other people how to laugh on the internet. You know, they can follow their heart and do what feels right to them. But personally, when I want to express a genuine... you know, when I want to type out something that expresses a genuine expression of laughter, I'll just say ha ha ha, because that's what it sounds like when I'm laughing in real life. You know, LOL, I think, has been in our lexicon for probably, you know, almost at least two decades at this point. I mention, I go into the details of its history in the book and how it was born on a message board. I believe it was a Canadian message board in the 80s. Anyhow, we've all been
using LOL. You actually name the person who is credited with inventing it. His name is Wayne Pearson.
Yes.
A name that shall live in infamy. Yeah.
And I think that he used LOL to signify, you know, as a way to, you know, as an abbreviation for laughing out loud, as a way to signify, you know, laughing that was bouncing off the walls or some way that he had phrased it. And unfortunately, LOL has now been reduced to sort of a filler, just a way to punctuate our sentences. People just throw an LOL in to soften something that might sound harsh, or just kind of maybe to remind the recipient that, you know, they're in a jovial mood. But it certainly has been demoted from its original role as expressing genuine laughter. And so I go with ha ha ha, because I think that LOL is just an empty shell of what it was.
And you also, you go into this long, involved and very funny, explication of what different ways of writing LOL infer. Like if you write three lowercase letters, you say that means I feel nothing. I want this sentence and conversation to be over, but I lack the wherewithal to end directly. You say that if it's LOL with a period, that it's like ha, but sadder and angrier. So there are distinctions within these small little subsets of stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And actually, I have to credit my my former colleague, Katie Heaney, for that whole list of ways to type out laughter on the internet. It was reproduced from a post that she wrote, which I mentioned in the book. And she's hilarious, and she has a bunch of wonderful books as well, not about language, but I thought that that post that she had written was just too good not to include in the book. And yeah, you know, like LOLOL, it's sort of like, what does that even mean? Laughing out loud, you know, no one says that. Just say ha ha ha. Tack on a few more ha's at the end. We all understand. Yeah. It looks so silly, and it doesn't mean anything anymore. You know, LMAO is another, am I allowed to say the word that starts with an A? I don't know how PG.
But probably not. My director says probably not, but it's laughing okay. my off.
My right. butt off, you
yeah,
know, but
right.
the A word.
Right.
So that maybe, I think that still comes into play in a more sort of genuine way. It's hard to say. And it also depends on the person sending it. You know, are they a person who lives on the internet? And who writes for BuzzFeed, or who lives on Tumblr and who uses LOL as a kind of punctuation marker, or are they actually using it to signify laughing out loud? You know, that kind of has to be thought of as well. But I think you're safe with ha ha ha. You're safe with a laughing emoji. I think the laughing emoji does the job quite well, succinctly. You can't misinterpret it. So now we have emojis at our disposal, which I think are the most evolved forms of punctuation on the planet. But
yeah.
that's, I don't know if you want to go into that. I can talk about emojis.
Yeah, because you said that in 2016, the word of the year wasn't an emoji. And most likely 2017 won't be either. This is when you wrote the book, and it wasn't. All right. And you say, I'll come out and say what everybody's thinking. We should really just have an emoji of the year as
yeah.
determined by a board of distinguished experts. So if you are on that board, what should be the emoji of the year for 2018?
Oh, man. Oh, that's a tough question.
It is hard to put you on the spot without thinking about it a little
yeah.
bit. Yeah, that's tough.
I think they just added a burrito to the emoji library.
Excellent addition.
Yeah.
Our director wants the alien emoji.
The alien emoji. The alien emoji has been around for a while, though. Mm-hmm. But today would be a great day to use the alien emoji, given the UFO sightings in Ireland.
Oh, I hadn't heard about the UFO sightings in
Oh,
Ireland.
Yeah. Yeah, there was I don't want to get off track
okay.
here.
Okay, that's a different story.
You'll
have to come back tomorrow where we do yeah. aliens in Ireland with our alien expert, Emmy Favila. She is the author of A World Without Whom, The Essential Guide to Language in the BuzzFeed Age. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @midday@wypr. So Mark sends us an email. He says, my epitaph will read composed of, not comprised of. Okay. Using comprised of actually reverses the meaning of comprise to include or embrace. I can accept nuanced changes to language, but not turning a meaning inside out. What do you think?
I'm with Mark. Is that
yes.
his name?
Mark.
I'm with Mark on that one, actually. You know, I think that there are still, I mean, if you, the point of my book is that, you know, there are still, of course, hard and fast grammar rules. They're getting a little loosened, but something like, you know, comprise versus comprised of, that's a yes or a no, you know, that's correct versus incorrect. I agree. I'm with Mark on that one.
So Rebecca says, what's happened to his being right save the day? All we hear and read now is him being right save the day, or me being right instead of my being right. Now, I always was taught that the gerund takes the possessive, so that you should say my or his being right rather than him being right. What's your take, Em?
I agree. I also was taught that the gerund takes the possessive. In my writing, I always make sure that it follows that rule. But again, when we're actually, you know, at a bar, at a restaurant, talking to our friends, are we going to stick by that rule? Probably not. But if you are writing for a professional organization or publication, then yeah, then stick with the gerund there.
We have an email from the retired assistant principal of Baltimore Polytechnic Institute. That's one of our great high schools here in Baltimore. This is from Robert Levine or Levine, who says, when did that which affects something become that which impacts something? How did impact the noun become impact the verb and displace affect?
Ooh, everyone wants to hate on impact as a verb. And I don't understand why. because so many nouns over the course of our linguistic history have moved over into the verb category. And for some reason, people just really cannot get over the fact that impact is used as a verb. And it's, again, it's the way that our language is evolving. And I think that once you have noticed it and you want to fight against it, the battle's already been lost, you know?
Yeah.
It's, and I can't think of other words off the top of my head, but I actually use that specific example in the book, and I have some examples of other words that moved from the noun into that were basically, you know, verbified nouns, and no one seems to have a problem with the very many other words that fit into that category. But something about impact is just really grinds people's gears.
Party is the one that comes to mind for me. And I just can't imagine in Wayne's World, you know, Wayne and Garth saying, "Let us go to a party, Wayne. Let us go to a party, Garth." You know, it's party on, Wayne, party on, Garth. I mean, it just, you can't imagine it. But when it first happens, it strikes the ear a little crazy, and you just need to hear it a gazillion times, and then it becomes normal. I mean, popular usage, you really make the case that popular usage should be the determining factor. The way we talk should be the way we write, unless, as you just mentioned, you know, it's in some professional journal and there's, you know, got to be sort of editorial standards that are different than the real world. You also make the point that email, first of all, how do you spell email? Has it got a hyphen in between? Is it capitalized?
No hyphen. I think we've moved beyond hyphenating and capitalizing anything that starts with E, as a means of signifying electronic email. I think e-commerce, sometimes you'll see it with a hyphen, but email is just such a ubiquitous term that we use on a daily basis that we've definitely moved beyond the hyphen there. We've moved beyond capitalizing internet. One word.
Mm-hmm. But you also say writing emails is hard, and it really is. I totally agree with this. You say there's frankly too much thought that goes into the whole process, because now that we don't have to spend an hour typing a letter up, printing it out, making sure everything is perfect before we lick the envelope and toss it into the big blue box, we think it's an excuse to get creative every step of the way. It is not. And this, truer words have never been written, Emmy, I got to tell you.
I'm glad that resonated with you.
It really did. But, I mean, first of all, and you talk about how to get into an email and how to get out of an email. Getting out of an email, people write best or they write all best. I am myself guilty writing many times all the best, comma, Tom. What's your take on the proper least, you know, horrible way to exit to the gentle dismount from your graceful dismount from your email?
Yes, I'm also a fan of best or all the best. Regards is nice. Kind regards, sure. But what if you don't really know the person on the other end? Are you sure you want to be kind to this person? Are you sure they're not a terrible human? You could just say regards. I'm a fan of best. I think it's a nice neutral, not loaded sort of way to end it all off.
And how about the fact that strikes me as a generational thing, that the millennial generation almost always starts emails to me, "I hope this email finds you well."
Oh, God.
I get this all the time. And I have never heard a 60-year-old or never seen a 60-year-old write me an email that starts like that. What's that all about?
I think that might honestly have to do with a person maybe who is earlier on in their professional career and just doesn't understand that you can cut to the chase and get straight to the point, because people are busy and don't need to read all these filler words, hope you've been well since we last chatted, that sort of stuff. I guess that's okay, but I hope this email finds you well. It's just, it means nothing.
And also, it's grammatically incorrect. Emails don't find anything.
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
I hope you are well. It means, you know, I have the hope that you are doing okay. My email doesn't do my hoping for me.
So much wrong with that. And just don't. Just cut to the chase. Let the person know why you're emailing them. Save them the time. If you guys have a sort of personal close relationship, start it off with something a little more individualized. But no, I'm with you on that one.
Emmy Favilla is the author of the book A World Without Whom, The Essential Guide to Language in the BuzzFeed Age. When we come back after this quick break, we'll take more of your calls and comments. 410-662-8780 is the number here at Midday. Our email, midday@wypr.org, to send us a tweet @MiddayWYPR, to follow me on Twitter @TomHallWYPR. We will be right back. Stick around. And welcome back. I'm Tom Hall. Emmy Favilla is my guest for the hour. She's the author of A World Without Whom, The Essential Guide to Language in the BuzzFeed Age. She is senior commerce editor at BuzzFeed, where she's wrestled with serial commas and em-dashes since 2012. And in this book, she takes up all sorts of topics having to do with how we use language in the internet age, how our tweets and texts have informed our writing in other forums, how in the age of globalization we should write for international audiences, how to write about sensitive topics and the stuff that really matters, as well as popular usage and how that has influenced our writing and how that's okay. You can join us at 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, and to drop us a tweet @MiddayWYPR. We got tons of calls, lots of emails. Before we go back to the phones, here's a couple of emails about the word fewer. Gordon says, I'd like to know how you feel about the apparent demise of the word fewer. Should I accept that it's gone the way of whom? And Anne says, I cringe when I hear someone say less apples versus fewer apples. I learned that less should be used for indistinct quantities, like less flour, and that fewer should be used for quantities that you can count, like apples. So, and I talked about this at the top of the show, you can do the same thing of more than as opposed to over. When it comes to quantities, you're pretty loose about it, it seems.
I am, but I do agree with Anne. It does make me cringe when I hear or I read, you know, there were less apples in this bag than in the other one. I personally am still a stickler for using fewer for quantifiable things and less for mass nouns or, you know, things like time. I instated that rule at BuzzFeed, and I always made sure that stories adhered to that. And I think that, you know, the current copy chief does as well. I don't think that something about, you know, more versus over than, there's something less offensive about using those terms interchangeably than there is about using fewer and less interchangeably. It just doesn't sound right. And I don't have a better explanation than that.
Part of it is just your artistic ear. I mean, sometimes your ear hears something and it just doesn't work. I agree. And whether it's right or wrong or indifferent, I mean, it just, there are things that work and things that don't when you're writing.
Yeah. And I don't think that less and fewer are being used interchangeably. I don't think that, you know, less is going the way of whom, or that fewer is going the way of whom, rather. At least I really hope not, because that's something that I'm a stickler about.
Yeah, me too. Let's go to back to the phones. Patrick in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Emmy Favilla.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, barely. What's on your mind, Patrick?
Okay, my question is, why does everybody start a sentence with the word so? It sounds as if you missed the first part of the question.
All right, that's a good comment. So, Emmy, why do people start sentences with so, and should they be taken out and
I think that you
hurt
should
because of it.
I noticed that I actually tend to do the same thing too when I'm in personal correspondence, in emails and such, and I'll go back and I'll cut the so, because I don't know what it is. I think maybe it's also just another way that we are writing, you know, as a way to mimic the way that we actually speak. But I agree, it's not necessary. And I think that it can add a tone of, you know, casual. It can add like a casual tone, a more conversational tone to emails and that sort of stuff. But I agree that I don't think it's necessary. And I think it's also one of those things that I have to go back when I write an email and say, hey, did I really need the so at the beginning of the sentence? It depends. Yeah. It's hard to have a blanket rule for this sort of stuff. But I do think that it lends an air of, you know, casualness and conversational.
I agree. That's an interesting example because a couple of years ago, I got a very nice email from a listener who said, I really enjoy your show and you're a terrific human being, et cetera, except you start a lot of sentences with so, and you shouldn't because, you know, it's just not necessary. And so when I do that, which I still do, because the rhythm of the sentence seems mm-hmm. to be better if the word so is in there, I always think of this very kind gentleman who wrote me a very civil and lovely note about it. I mean, I'm conscious that I'm using it. Mm-hmm. And perhaps I wouldn't use it if it were for print, but if I'm using it because I'm going to say it on the air, there's a different calculation in there somehow as well. So it's good to know.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's another one of those verbal tics. I say, you know, all the time, and I hate listening to myself on the radio or anywhere else because I try to be cognizant of it, but it just gets in there. And of course, you know, saying something like, so here's the thing. There's something different and warmer about that than just diving right into
here's the thing. Yeah, no, that's a really good point. Ronnie emails us and says, it totally derails someone's argument for me when they speak faster than they think and they get the words don't and just out of order. For example, someone will say, you don't just put ketchup on your eggs, which has an entirely different meaning than what they intend, which is you just don't put ketchup on your eggs. That's an interesting observation.
Oh, yeah. I also talk about misplaced. I think that's what's called a misplaced modifier, mm-hmm. basically, where you're putting the modifying word that you're using to describe what follows it in the wrong place. And it can certainly change the entire meaning of a sentence. So you have to be mindful of where that adjective or the adverb or whatever the modifying phrase is, because it can totally make things not absolutely clear.
You call the period the bully of punctuation. And why is that? And you also say that, and this is another example of how the internet has impacted things, because the nemesis of the period is the line break, which in a tweet or something on Facebook even, you don't necessarily get. So talk about how the bully of punctuation is the period.
For sure. And I hope I don't get a lot of hate mail and hate tweets and calls for this, because I feel like it's a sore subject for a lot of people. But again, context is so key when it comes to the period, because we have line breaks and because we are posting things on social media that are one line long as opposed to a full paragraph. We don't need that period at the end to let everyone know, hey, the sentence is over, because who needs to know that when there's only one sentence? I'm not advocating by any means to not use the period in journalistic stories in anything more than a line long, really, even in your personal correspondence, unless it's an email and you want to just use a line break to start a new sentence. That's fine. Do what you want. But in professional writing, you know, the period is never going to go out of use. It's our most fundamental punctuation mark. But in something like text messages, a period, all of a sudden, as of a few years ago, has a very, it all of a sudden became a very loaded mark, and it can come across as maybe aggressive or sound like someone's angry at you if they use a period at the end of their one-line text as opposed to just sending it off without punctuation at the end. And I think this is a trend that started with younger generations, and I feel like people in their teens, 20s, and 30s get it, but those who are maybe a little bit older than that think, what are you talking about? You know, this is the way I've always communicated. I put a period at the end of a sentence, even if it's only one line long. And the New York Times they wrote a story about, the demise of the period, and they did it by, you know, head-spinningly not using periods throughout the whole piece, which was just such mm-hmm. a nightmare to read through, you know, to sure. really hammer the point home. But I think that context is key. If you're sending a text message, you don't need the period at the end. And I do think that can come across personally. I get a little nervous if I get a text from my boyfriend with the period at the end. I'm like, are you mad at me? What's happening? You know,
yeah,
and you
all, That's interesting. Oren is an email listener who says, it's amazing how a period or lack thereof can drastically change how someone reads a text message. Mm-hmm. So he says, if someone responds, okay, period, with a period, it seems to imply, okay, fine, whatever, you jerk. And so
right,
to avoid
exactly.
this now, I just always type okie, as in okie dokie, to keep it light and easy and avoid any miscommunication. That's the thing. Tweets and emails, boy, oh boy, you could have your meaning misconstrued 1,000 different ways. It's dangerous out there.
It really is. And I think, again, the point is to be mindful of the medium in which you're communicating. Are you writing a story for a professional organization? Are you writing a tweet? Are you writing an email? Are you writing a text to a friend? And then the whole deal with, you know, periods at the end, it also is dependent on the person who's writing the text. If they're a person who uses periods in all their texts, then you don't have anything to be worried about. If it's a person who typically doesn't use periods at the end of their one-line text, and all of a sudden, you know, you get a period from them saying, that's fine, period, might have something to worry about.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it might sound a little more harsh. Let's go back to the phones to Barbara in Whitehall. Barbara, welcome to Midday. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I just had a question about using you and I. It just makes me crazy when people use you and I to sound more professional, I guess, and then you and me. And I was always taught that you break the sentence down, and if you can say, you went to the store and I went to the store, you wouldn't say me went to the store.
Yeah, so you wouldn't say you and me went to the store, you'd say you and I went to the store.
Yes.
But those rules, again, those are some old-fashioned rules. Do they still hold, Emmy? What do you think?
I think they still apply, for sure. You kind of have to figure out if you're talking about the subject or the object of the sentence. You could say, you know, you and I went on, do you remember when you and I went on that trip last year, versus please, please do the blank for you and me. I can't think of a better sentence right now. But, you know, I think that rule still applies. And I think that with, when we're talking about pronouns, it's important to remember whether we're using it in the objective or the subjective case.
You talk about how grammar can be used as a window into one's soul. You say less agreeable people were more sensitive to grammos, in other words, grammatical mistakes, while more conscientious and less open people, were sensitive to typos. You know, so people are sensitive to grammatical things and not so sensitive to typos. They don't care about that. Others get really ginned up about typos and they don't care about grammar. And it really tells you the kind of person we're dealing with in each case.
Hey, it was a scientific study. The science is there. It's not my opinion.
It's all about the data. It's all about the data. We got time for one more quick phone call. Let's go to Joe in Baltimore. Joe, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, Emmy and Tom. I hope this call finds you both well. I have a question about...
Sorry, Joe. That's all the time we have. Okay.
I have a question about periods at the end of bullet list. I've always... omitted the period at the end of a bullet list. I've had other people who say you should have it. I want to know what is the proper placement for that.
Good question, Joe. What do you think, Amy?
Generally, I think that bulleted lists can do without the period unless it's, I mean, typically in a bulleted list, what first comes to mind is just a list of things rather than full sentences, in which case, of course, we don't need the period at the end. But if it's a list of full sentences, fine. I think the key is really just to be consistent throughout so it doesn't look distracting. Really, the point of everything written for an audience is to make sure that it's as least distracting as possible. And you don't
exactly.
want some to have periods and others to not have periods. So I think as long as you're consistent throughout, if it's just a list of few word items, no periods necessary, as opposed to full sentences.
And I'm afraid we have to put a period on the show today. Emmy Favilla, I really enjoyed the book and really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
The book is called A World Without Whom, The Essential Guide to Language in the BuzzFeed Age. That is it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, as high school seniors put the finishing touches on their essays and college applications, a conversation about affirmative action in college admissions. Talk about that tomorrow here on Midday. We want to thank Joe Squared for providing lunch today. Joe Squared serves coal-fired pizzas, risotto, and local craft beers. Locations and hours at joesquared.com. healthypeoplejuice.com. I'd also like to thank Healthy People Juice for providing fresh, local, artisan, cold-pressed vegetables and fruit juices. Healthy People Juice is a social enterprise centered around community service and health. They offer a variety of cold-pressed organic juices. They're located in Fells Point. You can find out more at healthypeoplejuice.com. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.